The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast by Fresh FM, with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome, listeners. Welcome to Hearth Tales on Fresh FM. Join me, Rich McCoy, as we gather closer to hear the tales of seasoned artists, makers, creative souls, and those who love to support them. Listen to stories of their journeys, how they wrestle with their demons, and how they balance their calling with the scaffolding of admin, life, and self-promotion. Kia ora, listeners. Today in the studio we have Steve Ford, who is a photographer. Do you mind giving us a little introduction about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon, Rich. Yes, name's Steve Ford. I have a little company called Wise Dog Studios, and so I'm focusing on, pardon the pun, photography, and do some portraits, headshots, and some event work, as well as running the occasional workshop.
Which I was had the pleasure of attending, and it was fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks very much. No, it was real fun. Despite the inclement weather, we managed to get some great images.
Yeah, I had to go and have a good nap afterwards for some reason. How did you first get into photography? What was the spark for you?
Been involved in photography. Picked up a camera, really, I guess, in my early teenage years at home. I thinking about this driving over this morning, and I was a bit of a lonely child. Didn't make friends very easily, and photography was a thing you could do on your own, and so it's not a team sport in any way, shape, or form. And so that enabled me to, you know, I guess find my own little space, and then as a late teenager, I joined the Royal Navy and travelled extensively. So the ability to grab the camera and take some images as you travelled was just eye-opening for me. It was a wonderful thing to do.
And was there a particular image you saw? You was like, that's what I want to do.
I don't think there was one particular image. I do remember being out with the tripod and freezing cold mornings in a sort of national park close to where I lived, catching the ice and the sun and everything else that went with it. It was just a moment as opposed to what I was taking an image of. It was that place, that moment in time when you're on your own and everything's quiet, a little bit of bird sound going on. You know, the world really hasn't woken up at that stage. It was just a neat place to be for me.
And you've got quite an interesting background. You mentioned being in the Navy and being a bit of a loner, and I heard rumours of the punk thing. How do those worlds sort of work together and shape what you do?
Well, when you mention the word rumours, I get the shivers because it reminds me of Fleetwood Mac. And
I say rumours, you told me.
Indeed. So I think I was at a very impressionable age in the late 70s when punk rock came around. I'd grown up in a household where Mum and Dad really enjoyed their music. Dad was a little bit of a teddy boy back in his days at home in West Bromwich. And music was always on. Punk rock came along. It was just so different. It was not the polished big hairdos kind of people that you'd seen on Top of the Pops, and it was a combination of angry and had really strong messages that people were avoiding, I guess, at the time. And this is, the height of the Thatcher period. We lived in an area where there's a lot of coal mines around us, so the community was heavily affected. And yet the music just resonated. I think my parents would go, music? Really? We call them that music? It just had an energy again with it that has lived with me ever since.
Yeah. What bands were you most into?
Early Clash, The Stranglers, that sort of kind of music. Later in life, I've developed a passion for the bass guitar. I own a bass guitar. I don't play it. I own it. but my bass guitar heroes would be people like Jean-Jacques Bonnell from Stranglers and et cetera. But I always, we have this little game we play with some friends occasionally, which is if you had to buy a ticket or was given a ticket, a golden ticket to any gig, it would be Joy Division / New Order. So the work of Ian Curtis and his lyrics just really go deep within me. So much so I've got some words tattooed on the arms from one of their songs, Isolation. So it would be Joy Division, New Order.
Yeah. Beautiful. I had the pleasure of seeing New Order at a Reading festival.
Not long after, well I don't know when it was, but
definitely rate Joy Division more than New Order.
Yeah, absolutely. And Peter Hook, the bass player from Joy Division and New Order, tours with his own band and plays the Joy Division songs with a lot more passion and grit. They come across as highly polished on the two albums, but when you hear him live, there's a real grit to it, real angst.
And how do you feel that punk music may have influenced your kind of artistic or aesthetic sensibilities with your photography?
Yeah, really good question. I guess he's sort of looking for non-conformistic, that's a kind of term. One of the big challenges with being part of a camera community here, or anywhere in the world really, is that there's some quite tight rules around competitions and composition and lighting, etc. For me, it's all about the emotion and what's on display. So the image might just be a slightly out of focus, but it could be an absolute killer because it means something and there's emotion there. And I think that's the same with the music at the same time. I guess the non-conformist, not wanting to stick to the rule of thirds and all that, plays a bit of an edge on both sides.
Ironically, I find the punk aesthetic and mentality quite democratizing in that it makes an art form accessible to everyone.
That's the thing.
It's not about technical mastery or if you can afford to buy the most expensive kit. It's like, can you see the spirit and the poetry in a photographer?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the same with music, as you say. It's it may not be the flashiest guitar or the flashiest set of drums, but you listen to the words and understand what's going on inside at that moment in time. Totally. That's the difference. Yeah.
And how the hell does that all work with being in the Navy as well?
Really good question. Well, as I said, I sort of grew up in a mining area community. It was you were down the pit, so to speak, or off to doing an apprenticeship. I didn't fancy either of those. We lived nowhere near the coast. It was a couple of hours away. But I had an uncle who was quite influential in my life, who was ex-forces. And just the chance to get away from that small town and travel, I saw that as the thing rather than the discipline and everything else that goes with it. So I guess a bit of escapism in some respects from what was happening around where I grew up at that time.
It was West Bromwich you grew up?
Father was from West Bromwich, right. But we lived in a little town called Retford, which is up on the A1. Had a great nightclub in there called the Porterhouse. That saw many of the big bands come through as a bit of a warm-up gig. But it was a fairly dull place to live as a child.
And do you feel that those influences early on have given you a bit of an outsider's perspective of your craft?
I'd like to think so, for sure. Not conforming to the rules, and come back to the Navy thing in a second, but just wanting to do things a little bit differently as well. Later in life, before I left the UK, I worked for Apple UK. Shortly after Steve Jobs had come back to the company, and you know, we did things differently. Unfortunately, too differently in some respects, because the company almost went out of business. But now look at it today. And I like that. I like the underdog. I like that grit that was going around at that time.
Was that on the Hagley Road in Birmingham or the Apple?
No, I actually used to work in head office just outside London.
What did you do at Apple?
I was a sales manager for our large accounts team. So people like EMAP, we would sell obviously the desktop publishing solutions to all the major newspapers and publishing houses. But it was at the time when we were really struggling with Microsoft applications, and we were really struggling with hardware as well. One or two of our larger customers were looking elsewhere. It was really, really, it's incredible to think, it was really dark days of Apple.
Yeah. It's really funny because I ended up buying an Apple computer because I was doing contract work for EMAP.
Yeah.
And it was just ended up with that. Anyway, that's total aside. Yeah. But, and your work, so we'll go back to your photography stuff, because I could talk. Your work covers sort of portraits and commercial shots and stuff like this. Is there any thought line or style that you like to take to these things?
Not necessarily a style. I guess it's what I'm trying to do is find that real person. Like most people, I'm really awkward in front of the camera. And I like to think that I'm working really hard to bring the real person out, rather than just have that standard smile, kind of thing, or turn your head left, turn your head right. Just spending some time with somebody, getting to know them, rather than just click, click, thank you, gone. So it's not necessarily a style, I guess, more of a sort of technique to just really look for that little moment. And it might just be a fleeting second in an hour you spend with somebody, but that's what you're looking for. You don't want that stiff, just relaxed a little bit, but at the same time coming across obviously professional.
Do you think this, your own awkwardness in front of the camera
sorry,
it's okay, do you think that your own awkwardness in front of your camera gives you an empathy for the subject that you should maybe even subconsciously try and work with?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it has changed over time. Back in the days of film, people would be going, "Oh, you want to take my photo? That's fantastic, thank you." Today, it's, "You want to take my photo? Why?" Kind of thing. So particularly when you're doing street photography. And I think that's the same a little bit with people in business today as well. In the fact that, why does it need to be a photo of me? It's like, well, you're selling your business. You want your customers to buy from you. They want to see you. They want to know who you are. Rather than using some stock images, it's about you and your, and you as an individual. So, yeah, I think absolutely.
Totally agree. Changes. Yeah. As a former designer, you can always tell when people have used stock photography. Because there's so many Kiwi businesses that just look like American businesses, and there's a fundamental difference there.
I saw one yesterday where they'd used some stock photography and had flipped it around the wrong way, so the I stock was spelt backwards rather than
What would you say makes one of your photographs recognisably one of your photographs?
That's a really interesting question. I guess I've never looked at my images and gone, "Oh, that's my typical." We talked about style. That's my typical style. That's how I like to do things. I like to be close to people, I will generally shoot quite close up from that point of view, and I want to fill the frame with them as much as I possibly can do. So I guess that's a little bit of that style. That's how I'd recognize my images. But I don't, again, certain people are different in all walks of life, and having a thing that you map or transpose across everybody I don't think works for me, because you've got to look at that individual and figure that out. And that's, you know, yeah, that's what I try and do.
Do you, would you say you're quite meticulous in what you do, or are you a bit more instinctive?
I'm a fly by the seats of the pants kind of guy. I wish I was something completely different. I really do, because it drives me nuts. I'm a fly by the seat of the pants kind of guy.
I think that probably leaves you a bit more open to witnessing what's happening and responding to that with that approach, I suppose, though.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. I think that I like to say my creative juices flow at their best at the 11th hour. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll never go Christmas shopping, you know, 2 months beforehand. It'll be 2 hours before the stores close on Christmas Eve kind of thing. And if that presentation needs to be done in 2 months time, it'll get done 2 minutes before the deadline, kind of thing. And I think, you know, having that tight deadline just makes the creative flow work that much, you know, the barriers just disappear.
Yeah.
It might not be fantastic creative flow, but the barriers have gone, which I guess is the main thing.
Totally. And with photography, I often see with a lot of photographers, they rush out and they buy the most expensive gear and like copious amounts of it. And I often wonder, like, is what makes a really great photo, is it in the fancy gear, or is it in that kind of, in the person and the eye?
It's all about the gear.
Is it now?
No.
I was hoping you weren't going to say that.
No, not at all. I wish I could convince my partner otherwise. No, I think, first and foremost, you've got to, you know, it's about having that eye. Look at the observation at the end of the day, regardless of what device you have in your hand, whether it's a phone, whether it's a cheap Kodak Instamatic, or whether it's a, you know, a $10,000 medium format camera. If first and foremost, it's about observation. And a lot of the newer cameras today can come with a lot of technology that can really get in the way.
Mm.
I'm a great lover of Fujifilm cameras. I think they're just really basic. They have the bells and whistles, but you don't need them.
Mm.
And it has a real nice retro look and feel to it. And a lot of people have asked me actually if it's a film camera I'm using. And using film also slows you down at the same time. You're not rushing through. So in the age of digital, where, you know, storage appears to be very cost effective, we just keep thousands and thousands and thousands of images that mean nothing, because it's easier than deleting them. But in the days of film, you really took your time to think about it. So you know, what I try to engage with and teach is you know, to really, you know, don't just pick the camera up and snap. Observe first, have a feel for what's going on, and then, you know, interact with the camera. Absolutely. Yeah, convincing my partner I do need that $10,000 medium format camera is high on my priority list right now.
I've seen people make cameras out of scanners now. It's phenomenal.
There is there's a guy who was interviewed on one podcast from Exeter who was using things like blocks of cheese and putting holes in front of the block of cheese and then shining the light.
And have you ever taken like a photo that you thought has been really outstanding on a cheap piece of kit?
I would need to go back through and look. At the end of the day, my all-time favorite image for me is the very last photo I took of my mother on Christmas Day 2020, with her new great grandson in her arms. The two of them are looking at each other. There's a connection there. He's got a hint of a smile on his face, probably about 6 months old. And unfortunately, mum passed away the following day. But it's, you know, the whatever lens, whatever camera body is irrelevant to me. It's what that picture means to me and the emotion that I can see in that image as well. And it's not 100% sharp. There's a lot of noise in it, but it's that moment in time that means everything to me. Now, expensive cameras do come with some benefits. So, for example, if you want to do astrophotography, having a camera that really handles low noise really well. Having really, really slow shutter speeds or really wide apertures really helps from that perspective. You would never be able to do proper astrophotography with a phone currently, or with a cheap Instamatic. So, you know, again, depending on what you're looking to do, picking the right tool, and certainly in certain instances, an expensive camera can help achieve certain things. But from a basic taking an image and observing and capturing, then anything goes.
Yeah. I mean, the photograph you mentioned of your mother, it sounds like it just a work of poetry. It sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it's the words on my arm from Joy Division are, if you could just see the beauty, these things I could never describe.
Mm.
And that image to me is just everything. It means a huge amount, but it's, again, that connection that's there as well.
That's what is it Ron Barth talks about in the book The Camera Lucida, is about the punctum in a photograph that makes the photograph.
Yeah,
and that's all in the eye and the heart, really.
Yes.
Isn't it, rather than in the
absolutely in the, and yeah, that, yeah, if I entered that image into 10 camera club competitions, it probably would be rejected 9 times out of 10. And people say, well, doesn't that, you know, in my head would devalue what it means to me in some respects. So it's not perfect, but it's a perfect moment.
And is it maybe because a lot of those things look at the technical perfections rather than the mythopoetic approach?
Yeah, absolutely. They're looking for technique and adherence to camera norms rather than looking at emotions.
Well, maybe what we need is a poetic camera competition.
I'm really up for that. Absolutely. Yeah.
Beautiful. So how has your relationship with photography developed over the years, do you think?
So teenager, deep into it, joined the Royal Navy, and actually ended up being a ship's photographer in the Royal Navy as well. So sort of continued there. Then I think it went through a period of time for probably about 10 years where it really just didn't register. And I look back and think pretty much the same with music as well. Music and photography somewhat almost disappeared from my life. And then daughter number one appeared, closely followed by daughter number two. And so the ability to capture them growing up.
Mm.
Particularly when you're living on this side of the world and half their family are on the other side of the world, be able to share those images as well. Sort of reignited my passion. And I would say it's probably been that the last 5 years it's really taken. Well, right. Yeah, 2013, I was buying a lot of gear, Canon gear. And then in 2015, myself and my partner, Julie, we disappeared off. We downsized to 3 filing boxes. The Canon gear that I had was going to weigh 25% of my backpack, so I changed to a more compact camera. And we spent 5 years traveling, backpacking and traveling, and got back to New Zealand just in time for COVID. So I think, you know, sort of 2013-ish was really when photography really came back and played a major part in my life.
And what, so you mentioned this going doing the world trip thing. What was the impetus for that? Are you able to talk?
Yeah, my youngest daughter had gone off to university. When Julie and I first met, she'd already had this passion to travel. I wasn't a homeboy per se. You know, left home at 16 and a half, joined the Navy, traveled. I sort of don't consider any one place my hometown, so to speak. And we just had this view that we were going to travel for a couple of years. We would just, you know, we managed to exit work, sold our belongings, gave things away, donated to charity, and hit the road, as they say. And then we discovered this thing called house sitting and pet sitting. And 18 months to 2 years of travel turned into over 5 years of travel. So, you know, that helped tremendously keep the cost down. But being able to embed yourself in a community. So we spent probably 7 months in Italy at one stage, you know, living and breathing that very small town life, you know, grabbing the camera, taking it out to the Saturday market and photographing the old boys and old girls sitting around, you know, putting the world to rights. It was just a wonderful, wonderful opportunity.
Did you feel that that reignited your love of street photography?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think everywhere we went, I would search out those markets. I'd search out the sort of the open air cafes and squares to really get a feel for what's going on. And I'm also a believer in with street photography, you've got to be up close. Don't stand on the far corner with a big fat zoom lens in your hand. You know, the smaller the lens, the better. Get in close, get amongst it. And do it with a smile on your face, and you'll get smiles back as well.
Is there ever a time where that you've taken a shot and it's just really surprised you?
No, I don't think there is, to be true with you, Rich. It's a couple of images that, you know, as we've travelled, you go, again, just brings back memories, and it's a moment in time. But I'm not a great believer in firing off on burst mode, 100 shots, and hope that one of them will come through. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. And I think my partner would say also that every now and again, you've just got to put the camera down. I could have traveled 24 hours a day with the camera stuck to my face, but at the end of the day, sometimes you just have to put the camera down and enjoy what's going on around you. We were in Sucre in Bolivia, and there's a big street festival march going on, and you know, cameras out, hundreds of images later. And then next minute, I managed to push my partner out into the parade, and one of the guys grabbed and started dancing. It's just a moment again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, I could have taken that photo, but it was watching and just experiencing it.
Yeah. Do you think that being behind the lens changes your perspective on a situation that's happening, or does it get in the way?
It can do, for sure. Absolutely. I think, we started writing a travel blog as we moved around, and part of me went, oh, we should have started this when we should be more organized and done it when we initially hit the road. But then you also start thinking, well, then I go into towns or villages and I've got to find the best cafes, and I've got to I've got three or four photos that do this or do that, and you've got to experience it first. So I think there are times when camera can absolutely get in the way, and put it down, take a breath, and just look around. Definitely. Even closing your eyes and listening to what's going on around you, can really then start to hone those skills.
And what advice would you give to a young person picking up a camera for the first time, going, this is what I want to do?
Just get out there and start doing it. There's one of the huge advantages of the digital age is that, yes, you can hit the button, don't like it, delete, it's gone. You haven't got to wait days and days for it to be developed or get those images back and then try and critique them and then go back out there again and start again. Just get yourself a cheap camera and look for inspiration in everything you're looking at, whether it's around the house, out on the street, or at work, or at school. Take a long look at photographers of the past, even artists of the past, get and feel for what their work is. Start to look at light and what it's doing during the course of the day and how it falls on certain things at certain times. But more important, just do it. Just push that button, get out there and get amongst it.
And where can people find your work?
Wisedogstudios.com. You can jump on there, also on Instagram at wisedogstudios. So a lot of that stuff there at the moment currently is sort of commercial-ish kind of work, but I'm mapping out and putting in place a little bit more of a personal portfolio.
Nice.
And then from our travel perspective, the number 2, checkingout.com. So 2, checkingout.com. It's 2 people checking out of work and checking out of other places.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, Thank you so much, Steve.
No, a pleasure, Rich. Thanks so much indeed.
Thank you for lending us your ears. You can find more interviews and how to request a Hearth Tale featuring your favourite New Zealand artist, maker or creative soul on our website, hearthtales.com. And you can listen to this episode of Hearth Tales on freshfm.co.nz with a new show every fortnight. Until next time, fare thee well, friends. Fare thee well.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.